Hi, everyone. This is Rod Haas. I play the Flash on Legends of the Superheroes, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, fans of the spandex set. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, back in the lair where I belong, bringing you the Legends of the Superheroes. That's right. I'm devoting four episodes of Comic Book Central to the wild and wacky superhero spoof, and that is two more weeks than NBC gave it back in 1979. Yes, this show actually happened. It is not a figment of your imagination. Yes, Solomon Grundy was dressed as a gas station attendant. Yes, Ruth Buzzy plants one on Captain Marvel's lips, yells Shazam, and is transformed into a buxom supermodel. Yes, Mordru performs a show-stopping musical number. And yes, one of the shows was a celebrity roast hosted by Johnny Carson's sidekick, Ed McMahon.
Tonight we're going to relax and enjoy ourselves. And to take charge of the festivities is a man who's famous for relaxing and enjoying himself. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Ed McMahon.
I'm telling you, I haven't seen people dressed like this since I had lunch at Alice Cooper's house. Beautiful. Look at all those capes. This looks like Truman Capote's closet, doesn't it?
It all happened. And to prove it, you can buy the DVD and see for yourself. Head over to the Warner Archive at wbshop.com. Get yourself some goofy goodness. While you're out there in cyberspace land, be sure to stop by the virtual lair at our website. It's comicbookcentral.net. You can catch up with my interviews with Legends, Captain Marvel, and the Weather Wizard. They're both there at the website. That would be Garrett Craig and Jeff Altman, two funny guys. Of course, be sure to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Don't forget the network. Follow Comic Book Central on Twitter, where you can hashtag share the lair. Get the word out, folks. I appreciate everybody doing that. It's Twitter at comicbookctrl, or subscribe to the show in iTunes. Please leave a review while you're there. It is greatly appreciated. Now, last week, you heard from the arch nemesis of The Flash, Jeff Altman as the Weather Wizard. This week, I've got the Scarlet Speedster himself. That is, if I can slow him down just for a little while. If I can, then in just a few minutes, you're going to be hearing from actor Rod Haas. The Legion of Doom. As usual, this nefarious band of ne'er-do-wells has set a plan in motion to achieve world domination. Only our favorite DC Comics heroes can stop them. Well, except for Superman and Wonder Woman, who had deals with a movie studio and another network, respectively. But I digress. On January 18th, 1979, the Super Friends, the Justice League, the Looney League, whatever you want to call them, they went into action and saved the Earth from the Doomsday Device. Speeding his way across our TV screens was none other than The Flash.
Joy of the oppressed, wonder of the multitudes, The Flash! This crime fighter is swifter than the speed of light, fleeter than the rapidity of thought.
More than a decade before the CBS version, more than three decades before the current CW hit, actor Rod Haas slipped on the Crimson Underoos as the fastest man alive. Before getting the gig on Legends, Rod broke into the biz as a model. He went on to win a bunch of dough on game shows, he was cast in numerous commercials, and he landed roles on some of the top TV shows of the day. Medical Center, Policewoman, The $6 Million Man, and a memorable two-part episode of Battlestar Galactica. And Rod could also be found on the big screen as well. In the 1980 movie Hero at Large, John Ritter plays one of many struggling actors making personal appearances as Captain Avenger at movie premieres. And Rod plays the actual Captain Avenger, the title hero of the movie within the movie.
This looks like a job for Captain Avenger!
Captain Avenger!
Mind if I drop in?
Captain Avenger, the superhero who thrilled a generation, returns to rock the motion picture screen with new excitement. Sworn to uphold justice, protect to weak and punish wrongdoers. Captain Avenger fights a never-ending battle against the forces of evil.
Who says nice guys finish last?
This weekend, Captain Avenger appears in person at selected theaters. Check your newspaper for times and locations.
It seems like fighting fictional crime was all in a day's work for Rod. That's a fact we're celebrating here on Comic Book Central with a look back at Legends of the Superheroes. Joining me now is a man who has appeared in some of our favorite TV shows and movies, including The $6 Million Man, the original Battlestar Galactica, Mel Brooks' History of the World Part 1, and one of my all-time favorite films, Hero at Large with the great John Ritter, and he was the first actor to portray the fastest man alive in a live-action show. Here he is, folks, in the blink of an eye, The Flash, Rod Haas. Rod, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Hey, is it true that you put yourself through college because of TV game shows?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I love the story. How does that work?
Well, you know, back in the day when I was at UCLA, you had a couple of different choices if you were working your way through school, and a lot of kids would go and work in the library or have some part-time job. The rate of pay was about $1.87 an hour back then.
And big money.
Yeah. I mean, and you'd work a lot of hours anyway for not that much money.
Right.
So I was one of those people that was blessed with great general knowledge. You know, I knew a little bit about everything.
You're a trivia guy.
In a way, yeah. I was pretty good at Trivial Pursuit. But anyway, I didn't know anything in any great depth or detail, but I knew a little bit about everything. So anyway, I was talking to a girlfriend one day, and we were watching some game show. And, you know, the contestant didn't know what the answer was, and I blurted it out. And, you know, I said, geez, he should know that's so easy. And she said, oh, you think it's easy because you're sitting here, but when you're, you know, in front of a TV camera, it's a whole different thing. I said, it's not true. I said, you either know it or you don't. I mean, it's like these people who say that they're not good at taking tests. Well, they're not good at taking tests because, you know, they're not too sharp, basically. I mean, you know, that's what a test is all about. Anyway, being able to, you know, retrieve knowledge that you have acquired. So anyway, I said to her, I said, you know, I could do that. And she said, sure. So anyway, as it turns out, I took the dare and I...
Wait a minute, before we go too much farther, what knowledge are you accessing for the dating game?
That was actually...
Knowledge of women? Knowledge of relationships? Where are we going with this?
Well, you're right. I mean, it just happened to be the easiest game show to get on. And I quite honestly, I don't remember how it came about, you know, whether I mean, obviously I had to go and audition in person where they, you know, have you run through a mock game.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how I started. I started with the dating game. That was my first TV appearance, I guess.
Were you picked?
You know, I don't remember.
We'll go with yes.
I was on three or four or five times on the dating game. But
okay, well, you had to have been picked on one of them.
I was picked at least twice, I know.
Oh, there you go. That's it. We love that.
Yeah. There was a SAG strike or a TV commercial strike. And so there was times when there was no money coming in, but you could go on the dating game, and they had to pay you a SAG minimum. And so the idea was to go on and be entertaining enough to be invited back, but to lose. Because if you were picked, then, you know, you went off on your date with your lucky date.
And that was the end.
Yeah, so it was kind of a Pyrrhic victory, if you will, if you were picked. But anyway, it worked out for me. But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I just remembered my experience. I was a freshman in college at the time, and I went on the show. I came up with some clever enough answers or interesting enough answers that she picked me, and the date was an absolute disaster. I can tell you about that if you have time.
Please do.
our prize or our date was that a limo would come and pick me up, and then we would drive. I'd be driven to her house out in Woodland Hills or someplace like that. It was out in the valley somewhere. Anyway, and our date was to be at the what's the now defunct Brown Derby. We were supposed to have dinner there, and then we were supposed to go to a place called It's Boss. This is back in the discotheque era. After that, we were supposed to end up at Cyrano's for coffee or dessert or something.
Well, we went to good date. That's a good date. That's a good
yeah,
date.
Yeah. I mean, and for a kid living in Pasadena, I mean, this is pretty hot stuff. I mean, pretty exciting here. You're being picked up in a limo. I'd never been in a limo at that age. And, you know, going off to a Hollywood restaurant, one as famous as the Brown Derby. So, you know, everything went reasonably well until we got to the restaurant. The waiter came by and he said, you know, he gave us the menus and so forth. And I turned to her and I said, so what are you going to have? And she said, nothing. I said, nothing. She said, I already ate.
Oh.
I said, you must be, you're kidding, right? She said, no. She said, I already had dinner. I said, but that was the whole date. I mean, that was a big portion of the date. And I said, well, do me a favor, order something so I don't look like, you know, a jackass sitting here by myself. You know,
get an appetizer. Yeah. Get some bruschetta or something.
All right. So I thought, you know, I don't remember the poor girl's name, but I thought, what a little goofball, you know. Anyway, so I had dinner. She was ordered a meal, and she just picked at it. I mean, maybe one or two bites. So anyway, we finished the meal, and I said, well, are you ready? We're supposed to be the lead off the dance or a dance over there at It's Boss, which was a disco that we never made it to. And we get back in the car, and I asked her about dancing, and she said that she didn't know how.
Oh.
And I said, come on.
This is painful.
Said, girls are born knowing how to dance. I said, you guys take that in the PE, right? And she said, no, she said, I don't want to go. Anyway, I didn't know quite what to do at this point. And I don't remember our driver's name, but it was not Jeeves. But in any event, I leaned forward and I said, you know, we've decided to skip or forego the dancing at It's Boss tonight. And he kind of threw it back in my lap and says, oh, well, what do you propose that we do? I said, well, why don't you just drive up here, Laurel Canyon or whatever, and, you know, drive around on Mulholland for a bit. And, you know, the date wrapped up with me giving her a peck on the cheek at the end of the night, saying, well, I'll give you a call, and I never called her back.
I thought you were going to end up with you and Jeeves at the discotheque.
You know, I mean, I think that thought probably occurred to me at some point.
I bet it did, over appetizers.
Take her home, drop her off, and see what I might pick up you know, on my own.
Hey, tell our listeners, this is crazy. This is crazy. Tell our listeners how much you won on game shows.
Well, I would say I was probably on maybe 20 or more game shows over the course of, actually about 20, 25 years, probably in excess of around 200,000.
Oh, that's crazy.
Maybe a little bit less. I mean, I've won two or three cars.
This is in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I won a brand new Firebird, and I sold that and paid off a whole bunch of debts. But anyway, to get back to your initial question, you know, I found that you could get on these game shows and at a minimum walk away with $5,000 or $10,000 in prizes if you won. And, I mean, imagine how many hours you would have to work at the library to you know, come up with an equivalent sum of money.
That's a lot of Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah, so I found this infinitely preferable, and a lot of fun and very cost and time effective.
Wow. Yeah, you figured it out. You got the system. Obviously, very comfortable in front of the camera, modeling, commercials, television. Look, we're going to talk about Legends of the Superheroes, but that wasn't your first superhero. Speed King? Who's Speed King? I'm not familiar with Speed King and his superpowers.
Well, Speed King was actually a promotional character that they came up with for, it's now Six Flags Over Magic Mountain. Yeah, I had, was doing commercials, and I happened to go on an audition one week, and I booked six commercials that were all for the Magic Mountain. You know, it starts off where they have a helicopter shot coming into the park at night, and the roller coaster's all lit up, and they had me standing on top of this 360 loop roller coaster. It's about 90 feet off the ground. And the helicopter shot comes in, and you see a character that's standing on top of this roller coaster that's backlit, kind of. And then it, you know, cuts to my face, and I introduce myself as Speed King. I gave you, you know, the greatest high-speed rides of anywhere in the world, or whatever the copy was. And anyway, that was my introduction. They had a bunch of vignettes where I'm supposedly building the roller coaster and other rides and so forth at the park. And it was kind of a neat thing, you know.
Yeah, you're a superhero at that point. I mean, yeah. That's pretty cool. And not the first time you'd be a superhero. I mean, not the last time you'd be a superhero. But, you know, that got you recognized. And some of our – look, you had a ton of television shows. Battlestar Galactica, you were in a two-part episode. What some have mentioned as being – one of the greatest episodes, if not the greatest episode of the series, the original run. It was so great. It was remade in the Reimagined series. This was The Living Legend, parts 1 and 2. You played Colonel Tolan.
Right.
With the great Lloyd Bridges. Oh, my goodness. As Commander Kane.
Yes, he was a very nice man.
This is an episode. This is two amazing episodes. This is where Galactica is reunited with the Pegasus. Again, coming into this project, what are your memories of coming into the world of Battlestar Galactica?
You know, I remember meeting Lloyd, and I'd watched him as a kid growing up watching Sea Hunt. And here was, you know, the real McCoy in the flesh, as it were. He was a bit older at that point. And I remember the guy who used to play Ben Casey on TV was the director of it.
Is this Vince Edwards?
Vince Edwards, thank you very much. Yes, it was Vince. And we had all these cameras that had to operate based on the telemetry and so forth. So there were a lot of technical problems with it. They couldn't get the cameras to work. And so there were, you know, we were 3 days behind at the end of day one. I mean, it was that sort of a thing. Mm. And of course, I was loving it because I thought, well, instead of it being, you know, a 2 week shoot, this may be 3 weeks. And it was kind of blessed for that reason by delays and so forth. You know, and I met Lauren Green, who played, was Adama?
You're correct. Yep. The great Lauren Green.
Yeah. I don't remember too much about the other guys. There was Dirk Benedict, I think, was on the show, too.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Lauren Green, too, because, look, you're coming into this, Lloyd Bridges and Lauren Green. These are two of the legendary heavyweights in Hollywood. Right. You're coming in as a young actor. Are you intimidated? Are you just trying to absorb everything that they can emanate as actors? How do you approach this?
I wasn't intimidated. I was just trying to get through the day and remember my lines and so forth. And, you know, as the saying goes, not bump into the furniture. I mean, it was kind of an okay experience. It was kind of neat because I'd never worked on a high-tech show like that. And what I mean by that is, you know, sci-fi with all the cameras and the telemetry and so forth, or a futuristic show. So that was kind of neat. As I recall, we shot that at Universal, I believe.
The standout scene to me is when the two the two crews meet. You know, the two battle stars come together, the two crews meet. I'm blown away by this scene and by the fact that with the blocking and everything else, you're what, 6'4"?
That's right.
Okay. Like everybody else in the scene is not 6'4". You, there's a scene, I don't know if you, how, when the last time you saw it was, but there's the scene where the two crews meet. You tower over everyone in the scene. You look like a giant. Did no one tell the stars to like stand on an apple box or something at this point?
No, they evidently they didn't. But the drawback to those sorts of situations is, you know, they would light for the stars. And if you were like a co-star or a featured player, oftentimes you would end up in shadow, you know. Oh. So, you know, now that you mention, I mean, I haven't seen it since pretty much the day that it appeared on TV. So I'd be curious to see it again now at this point.
Yeah, you can pop on Hulu and it's out there. It's amazing. Okay. You watch a scene and it's like, and it's an epic thing, you know, where the two battle stars come together. And it's pretty cool. All the stars, you know, Dirk Bentley, everybody's there. But it's like Rod Haas is standing there and he's like towering over everybody. I'm just thinking like you could wipe the floor with any of these guys. It's amazing. It's a very cool scene. A very cool show. Look, we're going to get to Legends of the Superheroes, I promise. We've got to talk about one of my favorite films of all time, and I'm not kidding about this. I love Hero at Large. I've loved this film since I was a kid. I've loved John Ritter. I love Captain Avenger. I've got the novelization sitting right in front of me.
Wow.
I love this film. It's for somebody who hasn't seen it, I'll put the link up in the show notes. On the show, this is Hero at Large, Captain of... Okay, John Ritter plays an actor, sort of a struggling actor in New York, who is one of 62 Captain Avengers who makes personal appearances at the premiere of Captain Avenger, the movie. This is kind of coming in after the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. You play Captain Avenger, the movie within the movie, correct?
Right.
Okay, so there's the movie that takes place, and John Ritter's out there. He's one of these actors that shows up at personal appearances. You're the actual Captain Avenger.
Right.
In the movie. Okay, how did you get involved with Hero at Large? I know your scenes were probably shot separate. I don't know if you got a chance to work with John Ritter.
Some of the things I remember were technical difficulties with the outfit. The director wanted... In one scene, they had me stealthily creeping across some rooftops. And the problem was that the director, I shouldn't say the problem, but the director's, I'm sorry, the wardrobe designer was dating the director. I think it was his girlfriend. Possibly that's how she got the job. Anyway, she had designed this Captain Avenger outfit. And having played a number of superhero types or athletic roles too, it's very important that your costume not fight you. And in this particular scene or in this particular costume, she had me in these, as I recall, they were yellow boots and they were kind of, they went up to just below the knee.
Yeah, these are almost like Captain Marvel sort of Shazam boots. Like, yeah, these big superhero boots. They're big. They're unwieldy.
They had like thick foam soles, and you couldn't run on the damn things, and let alone appear to be have a cat like stealth across this supposed these rooftops on the MGM set, and I had. Come from my experience as speaking, and there they were pretty clever. What they did was they had these boot-like or these wraps that went around your shin and covered the tops of your, ostensibly where your shoes or boots, but underneath you had on sneakers, so you could actually move, rather easily or rather. You could run, you could, jump, you could do all the stuff that really were a problem in stiff boots. Anyway, she had these in these stiff boots, and I tried running across the supposed rooftops, and it just was not looking very good. And we spent several takes trying to do it. Finally, in exasperation, he said, okay, I'm going to have the stuntman come in. And I mean, he had the stuntman do my stunt of running across the rooftops. I don't think he did any better job than I did, but that's what they went with. I mean, it just, you know, your whole performance is undone by a stupid wardrobe issue.
I love that you're focused on the technical aspects of this, because you watch the film. Yeah, it's the film within a film. John Ritter's watching it, but I love that there's the detail that goes into it. Do you remember your line from the film, like the legendary line?
Who says nice guys finish last?
Yes.
It seems to me that I remember coming through. I was in some sort of, maybe it was an operating room or something. I come busting through a skylight. I land on an operating table, and I can't remember what the deal was. If somebody was being held against their will, or I don't know, they were going to be operated on or whatever, and I bust in on the scene and I drop through the skylight, yeah. And that's my line. I think that's what it was, something like that. I haven't seen this since the day it came out.
Oh, it's one of my favorite films. Now, I know you film your parts separate from John Ritter, but did you ever get the chance to meet him or to...
I did. John okay. was a very very nice guy. You know, I knew John, or I shouldn't say I knew him. I was aware of him from Three's Company and so forth. But he was a very gracious guy. He came around prior to the start of production and introduced himself and told his co-stars how happy he was to be working with them. And I mean, some people would say it was a very political move, but I mean, it really did kind of make you feel like you were part of the family and, you know, welcome to the set, the show, et cetera. So he was a nice guy. I'm sorry to hear that he passed away a number of years back.
Yeah, and I don't know that he gets the credit he deserves, because yeah. I think people, like you mentioned, Three's Company, and look, sorry, that's what I grew up on. Right. But when you watch these things, and especially when you watch Here at Large, anybody listening, I totally recommend this film. It is amazing. He is a brilliant actor, and he is one of the greatest physical comedians of all time. I put him up there with Chaplin. I put him up there with Lloyd. I put him up there with anybody. He mastered physical comedy like no other. It's amazing when you watch John Ritter. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. And I love the message of the film, that there's a Captain Avenger in all of us. I mean, that's the thrust of the film, is that he? It's not about him. It's about just doing the right thing. You know, it's the little guy that kind of rises up and does, you know, he does the right thing.
Right.
It's a message I think that resonates today. It was shot in 79. It was released in 80. I think it's as fresh today as it was back then. Again, but just staying in that world of superheroes. You, my friend, are the first person to play the Flash in a live-action project.
Yeah.
did you know that at the time? Have people told you that over the years? Do you get a sense of that?
I didn't know it at the time, but I had played another character called Flash Gordon in some other show.
Yeah, this was with Nancy Reagan in the Just Say No campaign, right. 1986.
That's right. That wasn't really a show. That was a campaign.
Yeah, you're hanging with Nancy Reagan telling kids to stay off drugs as Flash Gordon. I love it.
And just between you and me and the rest of the world, I was smoking pot at the time.
Oh, don't tell. No. No, Flash Gordon, no.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was kind of a farce, but in any event.
But the message is... The message is there. Go ahead. You're the Flash. Go for it.
So, I mean, I loved the comic book character as a kid. That was one of my favorite comic books. I mean, it seems so cool, you know. And because you're with Comic Book Central, you know all that stuff where they would have these blurred panels, you know, of him across or blurred images of him across a comic book panel. And I thought he was really neat. So when I was selected to play him, I was really jazzed. Unfortunately, I don't recall them doing much with special effects in the show, or nothing like I thought they were capable of. This is a TV movie of the week, I think, or something, and it was filmed at NBC.
It was kind of like a variety show special, shot on video.
Yeah,
you pop in and you pop out. There's no special effects.
Yeah, it was shot on video, and you know they didn't have much of the special effects.
Right, right.
And you know I remember meeting Ed McMahon and Adam West and some of the other people that played some of the other legendary characters. One of the things that I remember that was kind of neat, and this is kind of off the topic, but it was shot at NBC. And as I recall, anyway, I was walking by one of the sound stages there, and turned out it was the Tonight Show set, and nobody was around. And I walked over to the set, and there was Johnny Carson's show at the time. And I went and thought, you know, geez, I wonder what it'd be like to be a guest on the show at some point. I mean, you know, your career is starting to take off.
That's a dream of every actor, right?
Sure, absolutely. Anyway, and then I went. I sat in the chair.
No, you didn't.
I know it's probably all in my head, but I swear to God, you imagined. I mean, you had that chair had certain vibes.
Yeah. You know, oh, of course.
Just having sat in it, and I ran into Johnny a couple of times at odd times over the years, but I remember sitting in his chair and thought, whoa.
Please tell me you told him you sat in the chair.
Well, the one time I ran into him, he was driving his new Corvette, and it was at a gas station a few blocks from my house. And, you know, you try to respect people's privacy. And I was filling up my car, and I looked over, and there's Johnny in his car. And I said, how do you like it? And he said, it's cool. And, I mean, that was pretty much it. I didn't want to get all starstruck and run over and say, could I have your autograph or that stuff? Because he was a pretty reserved guy.
Yeah, but you had the perfect opening line. Like, I sat in your guest chair.
You know, I think at that time I had not sat in his chair.
Okay, fair enough.
I hadn't sat in his chair at that point. And another time I happened to run into him at NBC, and we were both coming down the same hallway, and the hallways between the dressing rooms were somewhat narrow. And, you know, being a big guy, and Johnny is not huge, he's probably about 6'1", you know, we had to kind of make way for one another. And, you know, he was very polite. I mean, it was just a nod and a hi, and, you know, we both went on our way, but...
Oh, that would have been so great if you had told him you sat in his chair.
Yeah.
Or sat in the guest chair.
You know, it's one of those things where it's things that you you thought about what you should have said later on, or later on you think about what you should have said, or
but,
you know, you're so taken by the fact, oh my God, that's Johnny Carson.
It's Johnny Carson. Yeah, it's Johnny Carson. That's as big as it gets. As big as it gets.
It doesn't occur to you at the time that, hey, you know, this should be a great hook line to, you know, introduce, you know, some remembrance. So
fair enough, my friend. Fair enough. Look, we were talking about the legends of the superheroes. It has to be watched with a certain frame of mind. You can't watch it as it's a superhero show. You got to watch it as it's Mad Magazine come to life. It's a spoof. Right. It's for kids. It's goofy. It's silly. What are your memories of shooting this and working with? Look, Batman and Robin came back. Adam West and Burt Ward came back after over a decade away. What are your memories of working with them, putting on the suit, throwing on the spandex with these guys?
I think we were just introduced on the set very briefly. I didn't have any scenes with them per se, or if it did, it was just like a publicity still or something.
Yeah, you guys kind of go your separate ways within it. I mean, it's not direct. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And, you know, the suit was... you know, having played speaking, having been Captain Avenger, and now here as the Flash, I remember thinking, "Thank God, this suit is more comfortable. It's the spandex and the shoes or whatever the boots were easier to get into and out of, and so forth." So I was more comfortable with my suit. I mean, as an actor, I never really thought too much about wardrobe until I came up against these issues, like on Hero at Large, where you know your performance is really affected or undone in to some degree by, the wardrobe. So anyway, the costume was easy and comfortable. And, you know, I wish something more had been come of the show that had been done differently. Like you say, it was kind of a camp rendering of the comic book heroes. So it, I don't know, it just didn't go the way that I had hoped, or it didn't take off or lead to anything more, really.
Had they talked about that? Did they say, look, if this hits, we're thinking series? Or were you just not even a part of that?
I wasn't a part of it. I mean, you know, obviously you have hopes that, you know, that this could lead to something bigger, but I don't remember it being anything other than that show. No talk of a series.
Did you keep the suit?
No, they never allowed you to keep the wardrobe. I mean, I suppose if you're a big enough star, you could demand it as part of your contract. But no, I mean,
you sneaked onto the Tonight Show set. I thought maybe you were a little stealth and maybe sneaked like a wing out or something.
No, I was in street clothes. I was not in my flash outfit. Although that would have been kind of neat.
That would have been, look, okay, memorable scenes, memorable moments. I know. Well, there's Charlie Callis is there, the great Charlie Callis.
Right.
Who, like, blasts this, what is it, a lectern in front of you with a little flash symbol and it blows up in your face. Any dangerous moments?
You know, I mean, until you mentioned it, or actually, even though you have mentioned it, I don't remember that happening. So I can't say as I, you know, have much recollection of stuff like that.
Maybe they did get a little too close to you and you got knocked out or something.
Well, you know, I saw a still from the show that a friend of mine pulled up online a while back, and I'm smiling or laughing, but and I have my ear to the little wing next to the where the ear is on the costume, and it just looks like I'm happy but hard of hearing. So I don't know. Maybe I was deafened by the explosion and it dazed me such that I've been concussed and don't remember it for that reason.
You're in a lot of spandex. You're in a lot of spandex there.
Yes. Back in the day.
Did you get to talk to Adam West and Burt Ward a little bit, or just like, hey, you know, what was it? I mean, did you get to interact with any of these guys, or is it pretty much just like go in, say your lines, and hit the road?
That was pretty much it. I mean, you know, Bert and Adam were, you know, very polite. I mean, and congenial. You know, they'd been on Batman and Robin for years prior. You know, they kind of knew the ropes, as it were. But we didn't have much interaction. I don't recall having any real scenes with them other than, you know, maybe some group photo or something when they were shooting stills for the TV show.
Well, it's on released by Warner Archive Video. It's on DVD now, so anybody out there can go get it and check it out in all its 70s cheesy, campy, goofy glory. It's a crazy project. Hey, fans might be wondering what you're up to these days. Let's talk about your latest role, Morty the Mortgage Man.
Oh, well, yeah, Morty's a cartoon character.
Is this another superhero? What's Morty the Mortgage Man's superpowers?
Well, I'm a mortgage broker, and, you know, I work in the Oceanside, Carlsbad, San Diego area, and he is our iconic cartoon character that, you know, I guess represents me in a sense.
Does he have the superpowers of putting you in a house that you can afford?
Yeah.
What do you want? Efforts.
But the
it's mortgagestraighttalk.com.
It is.
And you're putting people straight on what they need to know about mortgages.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the whole idea behind it. You know, the fact that most people do not understand finance. In my background, prior to becoming an actor, I got my master's in finance theory from UCLA. So, you know, I have essentially an MBA from UCLA in finance. And I was also a financial planner for a number of years. So I can understand financial concepts and can explain them to most people so that they understand why we're doing what we're doing, or, you know, how to get them into a home, or what the best financial arrangement is. So if any of your listeners want to do a loan with the Flash, want to buy a house, I'll be happy to facilitate that process.
Oh, that speaks to everybody in our audience. And, that who wouldn't want that?
Right, and hopefully we'll do it in a flash or in record time.
I love it. You know, set up when you see it. That's amazing. He's still a superhero. He's still keeping the global economy in check. Are you on social media? How can fans find out more about you? Website?
Well,
where are you at?
I am on Facebook. I'm not one of those people that goes up there very regularly, but certainly I'm there. I'm not familiar with Instagram or Snapchat or Pinterest or some of these other. I do not have a Twitter account. I'm a little bit of a dinosaur in terms of social media. I mean, I actually joined Facebook because I saw the movie that was with Jesse, what's his name, that was all about Facebook, Social something or other.
Oh, The Social Network, yeah.
The Social Network, yeah. I mean, I was so taken by him, his performance, the director and so forth, the movie really, that I joined Facebook.
There you go. It did its job. Have you seen the new Flash TV show?
You know, I think I saw one episode or something. I think it's on at a time when I watched some other show. I'm not sure. But I saw Green Arrow, and I was also a fan of Green Arrow comic books, too. And he had such neat arrows, and they had all these elaborate devices. But I haven't seen the TV shows live up to the comic books in a way, even though obviously they could do a lot of that stuff nowadays that would make it really neat, but I haven't.
It's always tough to adapt them, and on Green Arrow, they have worked the boxing glove arrow in. They found a way to do that. It was slick, it was awesome, and it made the nerd boy in me just kind of like squeal with glee, so that was fun.
Wow.
That was fun. I think you'll get a kick out of it. Well,
you wet my appetite.
My job here is done. It's on the CW, yeah. The Flash, that's one of our favorite shows right now.
I'll take a look at it.
So take a look at it, but you, my friend, were the first.
Yeah.
You were the first. And Rod, hey, who says nice guys finish last? Right?
Yeah.
You're first in our book. Thank you for your memorable roles. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you for joining me to celebrate the legends of the superheroes. We love it. Thanks for joining me on the show.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Once again, cold, harsh reality shatters my illusions. Now, this time it's The Dating Game and Flash Gordon. Didn't they always live happily ever after on The Dating Game? That's what I thought. Well, maybe not. I don't know. C'est la vie. Had fun times catching up with Rod Haas and celebrating legends of the superheroes. If you want a mortgage from The Flash, it's MortgageStraightTalk.com. Check out Morty the Mortgage Man. Tell him Comic Book Central sent you. Big thanks to Rod Haas for joining me on the show today. And big thanks to all of you for listening. Hey, it'd be kind of strange to do this without all of you out there each and every week. Don't forget, you can catch up with every episode of Comic Book Central at the website. It's comicbookcentral.net. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you can take an extra minute or two while you're there in iTunes, please do leave a review. It is greatly appreciated. As I mentioned online, Comic Book Central is free. It always has been. It always will be. Some of the greatest talents in the biz coming your way. I want the show to reach as many listeners as possible. And reviews in iTunes will certainly help that along. So if you can do that, that'd be fantastic. Thanks again to everybody who has been able to do that. Also, be sure to give Comic Book Central a like on Facebook. A lot of new likes out there. Welcome, one and all. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. And hashtag share the lair on Twitter at comicbookctrl. A couple of emails this week. First up, I heard from Jeff Messer, who hosts the aptly named Jeff Messer Show. Jeff writes, Joe, I'm perpetually a few episodes behind as my own podcasting ventures keep me busy. I just wanted to say that the John Schneider interview is yet another jewel in the crown of Comic Book Central. Kudos, man. Oh, thank you very much for taking the time to drop me a line, Jeff. Always good to hear from you. Yeah, been wanting to have John Schneider on the show for quite a while. Got a chance at the last minute to catch up with him while he was on his way to work. had a lot of fun on that episode. And if you got a chance to hear it, John told that story about that final scene on Smallville that he's never told before. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, it's episode 70. Check it out on iTunes or the website. Again, thanks, Jeff, for writing in. I also heard from Chris Franklin from the Supermates and the Power Records podcast. Chris writes, "Hey, Joe, just listen to your first two episodes on Legends of the Superheroes. I watched these live in 1979, and even though I was only 4 years old, they left quite an impression on me. Years later, I had faint memories of the shows, mostly West, Ward, and Gorshin, who, of course, I knew well, and the other heroes and villains' costumes. For years, I wondered if I dreamed the whole thing up. And sometime in the late 80s, Comic Scene magazine ran a cast picture, and suddenly, I knew I wasn't nuts." No, you weren't nuts, Chris. It actually happened. Chris goes on to write, "I've since owned a bootleg and now the official Warner's DVD. My son got a kick out of these when he was really young. He watched The Challenge for one whole summer, as I remember. I think I have to agree with Garrett Craig. The humor needed some punching up. There's such great talent on these shows, but a lot of the material falls flat due to the writing, it would seem. It needs to be pushed out even further to really work, in my opinion. The sheer novelty of the character and actor combinations is still a lot of fun, though. West and Ward look great, although I wish someone had gotten Adam to tuck his cowl in under his cape. That's always bugged me. Alex Ross has stated these shows influenced his art quite a bit, and you can definitely see it, particularly in his handling of Flash and Green Lantern. Great interviews with both guests so far. Craig was a hoot, and I've always been a fan of Jeff Altman, going back to his Huey Hogg days. It took me a long time to realize he was the Weather Wizard. Weird coincidence, him being friends with Barry Allen's brother, Tim Thomerson, on the 90s Flash show. Looking forward to more, yes, even Ghetto Man." A great letter. Thanks for writing in, Chris. And yes, Ghetto Man, Brad Sanders, is on the way. More of that in just a few. You say your son watched these all summer? Okay, folks, that is some good parenting right there. Nice job. That's the way you bring up a young one. You also mentioned Comic Scene magazine. I love that magazine. I believe that was the sister magazine to Starlog. Didn't last long, but I still have all my issues. Speaking of magazines, if you want to read a great in-depth article about Legends of the Superheroes, check out Back Issue Magazine, issue 25. It's from 2007. The article, it's written by Andy Mangels, who also authored the book Lou Scheimer, Creating a Filmation Generation. Great book. A lot of fantastic information, cool pictures. I'm going to put the link up in the show notes. Be sure to check that out. As for Adam West's cowl, you know, it's been reported that the costume designer on the show, Legends of the Superheroes, cut the bottom of it too short so that it couldn't tuck into the cape. I don't know. It's when you watch it, it looks like it's long enough. It looks like maybe just, I don't know, I think maybe just somebody forgot to tuck it in. Who knows? Just another strange occurrence on a very strange show. And if you want to talk about strange occurrences, talk about Batman and Robin. Check out Robin in the introduction to both shows. That ain't Burt Ward. That's all I'm saying. Another strange moment. Why wasn't it Burt Ward? I have no idea. Thanks for the letters, folks. Listeners, keep them coming. When I get them in the lair, I read them on the air. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net, or you can click the Signal Me tab on the website, comicbookcentral.net. All right, kids, faster than the Flash, Superman is out of here for another week, but fear not, true believers, I shall return post-haste, because next week on Comic Book Central, you knew he was coming. Daredevil might have watch over Hell's Kitchen, but this hero has got the ghetto. I'm wrapping up my celebration of the strange, my time of time traveling with a journey back to the days before political correctness, when Match Game ruled the airwaves, when Huggy Bear was strutting his stuff on Starsky and Hutch, and Batman did the bat bump with a brand new superhero, Ghetto Man. Things are going to get wild and crazy when Brad Sanders joins me in the lair next week. Until then, I hope your week is legendary. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Somewhere in the heart of this city, in a small shop closing for the night, a robbery is in progress. But help is on the way.
Mind if I drop in?
Captain Avenger!
John Ritter is Steve Nichols.
How about that?
Hero at large.
Who are you, J. Edgar Hoover?
I'm Captain Avenger. such a nice boy.
He can't fly.
Tomorrow I'm leaping over a tall building at a single bound.
Wrong guy.
I'm expanding.
He can't bend steel.
I'm in big trouble.
Fighting crime is a dirty business.
But when there's danger, he can't turn away.
You're a crazy man. He dresses up in a comic book suit and goes around doing good deeds.
Hold it right there. Don't make another move.
If they're going to use real bullets, I think I'll retire.
He's loved by women.
I'm not always this easy.
I bet you say that to all the girls.
Cheered by men.
They want their superhero and all he stands for to hold on to.
And worshipped by children.
Captain Avenger.
Yes, sir.
Let's see you fly.
A hero's work is never done.
He's nutty, but noble.
I'm counting to three, Milo.
Who the hell is that?
This is Robert Redford.
He's dizzy, but dedicated.
People putting themselves on the line for other people. That's what being a hero is.
But he's really just an actor who got carried away with a role.
It's just like any other part. You gotta really get into it.
Captain Avenger.
Who sends you out on these missions anyway? Your agent?
I took a third-rate movie, made it the biggest hit of the year with a simple gimmick. Captain Avenger comes to your neighborhood.
Authorities are still wondering who the man in the red, blue, and yellow costume with a large A on his chest really is.
It's me, Steve Nichols.
All he knows about heroes is that people need one.
I heard it a couple of times.
All he could do was make himself hero at large.
Well, I think it's really terrific.
John Ritter, Ann Archer, Bert Convy, and Kevin McCarthy. Hero at large. At last, help is on the way.